The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
As New Zealand records its first case of COVID-19 in 2 months, just what has been the key to New Zealand's success of managing the pandemic, and just what kind of life are New Zealanders currently enjoying? Could the same be done here, as new, tighter travel restrictions are before Cabinet this morning? And globally, where is the quest for vaccine equity? Well, I'm joined by Helen Clark, former Prime Minister of New Zealand. Helen, good morning and welcome back to our programme.
Good morning to you.
Now, let's talk about your own country, first of all. It's been an object lesson to much of the world, but we're always told, oh, New Zealand can do it because they're far away from, huge centres of population and it's made up of a series of islands. Therefore, they can do it. We cannot. What say you?
Well, the truth is, if we compare New Zealand and Ireland, Ireland has a land border. And you have a big neighbour, which has had a very, very bad pandemic. Now, we don't have a land border with anyone. We have a 1,000 miles of sea till you get to the Kingdom of Tonga, 1,100 till you get to New Caledonia, and 1,200 till you get to the east coast, miles till you get to the east coast of Australia. So, yes, of course, we can more easily lock ourselves off. But I think there's also been something pretty different about the New Zealand approach as well. New Zealand hasn't tried this, flatten the curve approach. New Zealand in March said, we're going to stamp this thing out. And that's basically what we've done. Yes, we've had fits and starts. But look, if you look at the figures, I understand the population of New Zealand and Ireland are pretty similar at around the 5 million mark. I just checked online. I understand that Ireland has had 189,000 cases. New Zealand has had 2,290 in total.
Wow.
We've had 25 deaths, and you've had 2,977, according to today's internet. So, by world standards, we have had a good response. The challenge is we're going to have to keep it up because this disease isn't going away anytime soon. And as you know, because you're so close to the UK, the UK variant has got us all extremely worried because it appears to be more transmissible and it appears to be more deadly.
The question of keeping it out, people will begin to say, if they are not already saying it, at what economic cost? I mean, are we going to impoverish ourselves for the next half century because of what we're doing? Or are they appreciative of the lives that are still being lived that otherwise would not have been?
Well, New Zealanders are highly appreciative of being able to live a more or less normal life, apart from the fact that we can't freely travel to other countries. But, people go to football stadiums, they go to music festivals, they go to the theatre, they are having a normal life. And so they're very supportive of the border restrictions. Right now, only New Zealanders and permanent residents can come to the country. The only exceptions, and they're quite limited, are for essential workers because, like a lot of countries, we have certain skills and unskilled labour shortages, so we import. But no, there's strong border controls. Now, economic cost, look, I actually think when it's all totted up, you're going to find that New Zealand actually has not too bad an economic performance either. Look, tourism did supply 20.4% of the export dollar revenue. Now, okay, that's a hit not to have it. But on the other hand, New Zealanders travelled a lot and spent a lot offshore as well. So they're spending it at home. If we could get the travel bubble with Australia, which is, very much hoped for and worked for, Australians were 40 to 45% of our international tourists anyway. So we wouldn't be looking too bad. Mm. International education was about, 5% of export dollar earnings. That's obviously been down significantly, but the government's starting to move towards more visas for students. Look, all in all, we are happy to be a little bit down on GDP, but immensely up on the health and well-being index.
It's a fascinating economic calculation to do, isn't it? Irish people, I know, during the summer created a bumper season when we had our holiday resorts open. Irish people enjoying their home country versus going to Spain or Portugal or whatever it was. So the bald figures of, you know, the effect, you have to really go a bit deeper under the skin to see what the real effect would be, and spending at home and the economy kind of servicing itself is a fascinating one. So if you could do that,
It's like a circular economy, isn't it? And also what you've found is you can hardly get a building tradesman because, you know, apart from spending on holidays at home, people are doing up their houses, they're putting in new gardens, they're, you know, they're doing things they would have done with the travel money. So, you know, look, in a way, what goes around comes around. We're not feeling too bad. Yes, unemployment's up, but not anything like what was expected. And because foreign workers aren't coming in at the same rate to do a lot of the jobs they did in the economy, you know, there's big efforts being made to get Kiwis into those jobs as well.
Now, those who do work in the hospitality industry, all right, if you're a restaurant in Auckland, you're going to have your local customers. But those who depended on the overseas travellers, what have they done for employment? Are they the people who are on the dole, or have they just said, well, I'll become a gardener?
Well, look, there's a tremendous amount of seasonal work in New Zealand. So in the regional towns where, you know, there were the tourist hotels, the chances are it will be easier to divert people into the seasonal work opportunities in agriculture and horticulture. In Auckland, of course, a lot of hotels are being used for the quarantine because we have been requiring people returning to New Zealand to go into managed isolation and quarantine facilities for months and months and months. So a lot of the hotels are quite busy with that. It's not a sort of, you know, a total blow to the hospitality sector. As I say, the Kiwis are spending and they're traveling at home. And, you know, there is this sort of dual use of the hotels for isolation as well.
What is the reaction of a Kiwi returning home who is told, no, you can't go to your mother's and father's house, you've got to go to a hotel and hole up there? At what expense, too, is the question? You've got to do that for a fortnight before we will release you.
Yeah, well, I think actually for the most part, they're quite grateful to be home. And secondly, if they're returning home to live, or and that the measure of that is, will they stay for 3 months? Then there's no cost to them of their quarantine. There has now been a charge introduced for those who, you know, just decided they'd come home to see mum and dad and the grandparents for Christmas. And there was a bit of grumbling about that, but most Kiwis don't have much sympathy for the grumbling either. So, look, by and large, people are putting up with it. The only complaints I hear is people saying the food wasn't good enough in the hotel they were in, and they complain when they get off at Auckland Airport and are diverted to a hotel in Christchurch when their grandparents are in Auckland. But, you know, look, these are minor issues, aren't they? First world problems compared with what a lot of the world's putting up with.
Now, the question of the vital services, I mean, you don't make everything you need. How do you cope with the stuff that has to be flown in and making sure that infection doesn't come in that way?
Well, I mean, one of the issues has been, does COVID travel on packaging? nothing proven here at this point. But yeah, the supplies are coming in. I mean, there has been a bit of a hold up at the Port of Auckland, but more because they've been putting new cranes in them because of COVID. And again, you know, the demand for goods has changed. So the demand for mountain bikes and electric bikes went through the roof, and they just can't be imported quickly enough. So there's been those kinds of shortages. But, you know, by and large, we can't complain here. We have a good life. We'd just like this all to be over and see transmission radically reduce in the rest of the world to make it possible for us to get out and about again.
Now, at the moment, they are talking about some sort of compulsory quarantine here. The Cabinet in Ireland is discussing it this morning, and it'll be limited in its scope by the sound of things. What was the initial reaction when it was introduced in New Zealand? Did people think, this is impossible, this is too much trouble? I mean, so many people. How many hotels are we going to take over? Did they do that, or did they say, let's do what we need to do, no matter what it takes?
Yeah, very much the latter attitude. You know, we were successful in squashing COVID here with the first lockdown. People were a bit annoyed when Auckland went into another short one in August. And, you know, people just want the border controlled, and they'll do whatever is required to control that border. And when you get, you know, what looks like a breakout at the border, like, you know, one woman seems to have picked up COVID from someone in the same corridor and went home and then tested positive. There's been a moral panic about that. person, no one else has yet tested positive, by the way. I mean, maybe they will, maybe they won't. But, I mean, this is, as I say, the sort of scale of the New Zealand problem. By world standards, we are so privileged here.
When you do have an outbreak, and, you know, you've had this single outbreak in the last 2 months, but there were incidents before, the idea of the extent of the lockdown or the isolation that you do, I mean, can you almost do it street by street or district by district or town by town?
When the Auckland lockdown happened for 2.5 to 3 weeks in August, that was done at the borders of Auckland. And they were actually policed. They had the army on checkpoints. The Aucklanders weren't so happy with that. But the problem with that outbreak was that it did get into a more at-risk health community, including Pacific descent New Zealanders, where there's a higher rate of non-communicable diseases and poor health. And there was a great concern that it might, you know, rip through that community. So the measures were justified. But since then, you know, one of the huge improvements in New Zealand since the pandemic began has been the capacity to test and trace. It was pathetic when we started. We just weren't there. But, you know, the tracing apps, now the Bluetooth technology, you know, much more sophisticated systems. Even with this case of the woman who came out of the managed isolation and then a week later tests positive for COVID, having felt ill for a week, by the way, and recorded her presence at 30 different locations all over the place, you know, people are right onto it. I mean, there've been queues for hours of people at every location going to be tested. So people want to stop it. You know, they want the quality of life we have here to continue. And there has been just absolutely incredible public cooperation with what needs to be done.
Now, earlier in our conversation, you pointed out that we do have a land border with another jurisdiction, that being the UK, via Northern Ireland, which you don't have. And you pointed out how isolated in geographical terms New Zealand is. What do you think that we might do? Because you talk about creating a bubble between Australia and New Zealand, perhaps for tourism purposes. What about our situation here with our neighbouring island, both of us surrounded by water?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the greatest protection would be for an agreement across the whole set of the islands to police the border. But, of course, people have come and gone from, you know, Heathrow, the major international hub, you know, for a long time now. And it's only now the UK is looking at, you know, what we would regard as quarantine. Everything else has been self-isolation. We've been a lot tougher than that for many, many, many months. But, you know, let's see where this goes. I mean, the UK, you know, obviously having a very bad time. Ireland's not having a good time either. So extraordinary times call for extraordinary measures. And if quarantine's going to help, you know, I think the public will say, give it a go.
And the business of the mechanics of quarantine, I mean, we have looked in, certainly on this program, in some dismay at how tardy our government has been about the wearing of masks and about the testing of people coming in and voluntary isolation and, you know, people not giving the address where they're allegedly going to isolate. Is it your belief that the public is ready for what might in another era be described as draconian measures?
Well, I mean, not for me to speak for either the Irish or the British people, but, you know, the scale of what's happening there. I mean, here am I 12,000 miles away. I have two little great nephews who are about a year old each in the UK, in different parts of the UK. Both of them have been exposed at the childcare centre to other children whose siblings at school have COVID. So our family goes into a panic, you know, 12,000 miles away. Will our little great nephews have COVID? My husband's sister has had COVID. I talked to a friend today. His mother, who has dementia in a care home in the UK, has COVID. So look, it's just one story after another. And for me, if I was sitting in the UK, I'd be thinking, would the government just do whatever it takes to get on top of this? Because this is so debilitating, so destructive of lives and health and families. I have a young friend who got a COVID in the UK in March, and he's one of the long haulers, now requires two heart operations to deal with the impact. So this is, it's devastating, it's tragic in human terms, and whatever can be done needs to be done.
So do you believe, therefore, that the same should apply to Ireland, in the Republic here, with that border with Northern Ireland? Do whatever is required. I mean, you, as you said, you mounted the army around Auckland in New Zealand when there was an outbreak there. So the border that we have, if necessary, that's what we should do.
Oh, it's a tough call, though, isn't it? I'm thinking of the Good Friday Agreement and the open border. And I don't even want to get into this area, but I just hope that, you know, working together, Ireland and the UK can come up with, you know, solutions that are going to try and slow this. Because the longer transmission, you know, goes on, the more chances there are of more mutations, more variants. And then we go into the agony of, do the vaccines we have, you know, are they going to be able to cope with the new variants? It is a nightmare. So radically reducing transmission by proven public health measures is absolutely critical. And quarantine is one of them.
Now, you did in an interview I saw refer to the global response, not universally, of course, because your country is a notable exception. The response is flat-footed. And we can see, you know, the most powerful nation in the world, the United States, with, I think, 20% of all deaths, a quarter of all the cases globally. I mean, it's pretty shocking. So when it comes to vaccination, you wonder, will we be flat-footed too, and will there be vaccine equity? Because no point in all the rich countries being vaccinated and attempting to isolate themselves from countries where the coronavirus is still running rampant.
Well, this is the challenge, that on the current settings, those of us in high-income countries are likely all to have access to vaccination by the end of the year, and in some cases well before the end of the year. Whereas the facility that's been set up to support buying vaccine for low and middle income countries is only looking at about 27% coverage this year. So that there is an inequity, and I operate on the philosophy that with this pandemic, none of us are safe till all of us are safe. And that does mean we just have to get the vaccine rolled out much more equitably around the world.
Well, Helen, it's always very interesting to talk with you, reflecting the New Zealand experience and how we might learn from you. But for the moment, Helen Clark, former Prime Minister of New Zealand, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.